Hi, I'm David Fettis, and this talk is about rich and poor. Let's begin by asking a question. What causes poverty? There are two very different kinds of answers to that question. One kind of answer emphasizes that poverty is people's own fault. It's due to their personal faults. Poor people cause their own poverty by being wicked. They may be sexually immoral, and that leads to a lot of poverty because single mothers are often very poor. Or maybe they've been thrown into prison for various crimes, and now they have a hard time getting a job when they get out. So the poverty is their own fault for being wicked or being foolish. They made a lot of bad decisions financially, and now it's resulting in poverty for them. Or they're lazy and they wouldn't work hard. Or they're drunken or addicted to drugs, and that keeps them from holding a good job. Or they're just impulsive. They spend on impulse, and they're always running out of money. Or they're wasteful, buying all kinds of stuff they don't need. Or they're careless and make no plans. And people who tend to be more conservative or politically right-wing often will emphasize personal faults as the reason why many people are poor. A quite different answer is given by people who see things from more what is sometimes called the left-wing point of view or the liberal point of view. They say that social injustice and social structures are what cause poverty. Rich people make others poor by oppressing them, by exploiting and taking advantage of them, by defrauding them and ripping them off, by discriminating on the basis of people's race and ethnic background, or discriminating against women. And so discrimination causes people to be poor. And simply by rigging the system to the advantage of the rich. So you have these two quite different kinds of answers to the question of what causes poverty. Those who tend to be more conservative, more maybe what's called right-wing, emphasize the personal faults causing poverty, and those toward the left-wing or more liberal in their politics will often emphasize social injustice. And you get a similar split when it comes to the question, what helps the poor? If you differ on what causes poverty, then your notion of how to help is also going to be quite different. One approach is to say, well, the poor need to take personal responsibility. Individuals must become moral instead of immoral, wise instead of foolish, hardworking instead of lazy, sober instead of drunk or addicted or high, steady instead of impulsive, thrifty instead of wasteful, careful instead of careless. And if they'll do that, then they won't be poor anymore. Others say, well, if you want to help the poor, stop blaming the victim and do something about the corrupt system. Pursue public justice. The system must limit the powerful. It must lift the lowly and honor equality instead of discriminating. People and government structures must be fair, compassionate, and generous. Which of these approaches is correct? Well, if you look at the Bible, you'll quickly find that both are correct, in that some people become poor through lack of personal responsibility, and they can gain in their financial situation if they take more responsibility. But you also find that some people are poor because of a rigged system or because of injustices committed against them. We sometimes, in politics and other approaches in our thought, say it's either or, but the truth of the matter is that some people are poor through their own fault, other people are poor because they've been oppressed and taken advantage of, and some people it's a little of both. They've been oppressed, they've been trodden down by the system, and they're also making some bad decisions. And so any approach to understanding the gap between rich and poor and how to help the poor has to take account of the fact that personal responsibility is important, but so is public justice. Let's look at what the book of Proverbs says. Proverbs says very clearly that faults bring poverty. Lazy hands make a man poor, but diligent hands bring wealth. He who loves pleasure will become poor. Whoever loves wine and oil will never be rich. They're too busy chasing their pleasures. He who works his land will have abundant food, but the one who chases fantasies will have his fill of poverty. And I could cite many, many, many other proverbs about the importance of planning wisely and not being careless, about working hard and not being lazy, about not being drunk, and so on. You get the point very clearly from Proverbs that a lot of people are poor because they've made bad decisions, they've done foolish things, and now they're poor as a result. But that's not the only thing that Proverbs has to say. And keep in mind that Proverbs is saying a lot of these things in the context of a pretty good society. Remember that a lot of the Proverbs come from Solomon. And Solomon was a very wise ruler and a mostly just ruler. And in a society that's run by a Solomon, then if you're poor, it's likely to be largely your own fault, though not maybe always, but a lot of the time it would be your own fault if you had a ruler that wise and structures that just all the time. But let's face it, not every person in government is another Solomon, and not every society is as just as the golden age under King David and King Solomon. The fact is, not only can personal faults bring poverty, but injustice can too. And Proverbs is very clear about that. A poor man's field may produce abundant food, but injustice sweeps it away. The poor guy had a little property, he worked hard, it produced a lot, and somebody else just took it all. A ruler who oppresses the poor is like a driving rain that leaves no crops. A tyrannical ruler lacks judgment, but he who hates ill-gotten gain will enjoy a long life. So Proverbs talks about the importance of personal responsibility, but it's very clear that unjust structures and unjust rulers can do a lot of damage. The rich dominate the poor. A poor man pleads for mercy, but a rich man answers harshly. What do I care? I'm rich. I don't need to listen to you. He can do what he wants, and a poor man can't do what he wants. He's always begging others either to help him out with money or help him out by giving him a job or this or that. The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. That's a proverb that can have a couple of different applications. One is, as we already saw in a talk on dealing with debt, that you want to stay out of debt as much as you can. You don't want to be a servant to lenders and become a slave to those who hold your loans. But the flip side is that sometimes the rich will use debt and high interest rates and all of that to rule the poor, to dominate them, and to take advantage of them. The righteous care about justice for the poor, but the wicked have no such concern. Back when Moses was receiving God's law and setting up a society to be run by God's principles, the Lord said, if any of your fellow Israelites become poor and are unable to support themselves among you, help them as you would a foreigner and stranger, so they can continue to live among you. Do not take interest or any profit from them, but fear your God so that they may continue to live among you. You must not lend them money at interest or sell them food at a profit. When people are down, don't take advantage of them. Don't charge them high interest rates or become a loan shark. Don't sell them food to make yourself rich. Help them out so that they don't have to move to another society or so that they don't simply starve. God did not want people to use interest to take advantage of people in difficult situations. When the prophet Ezekiel was speaking of a contrast between wickedness and goodness, he said, a good man does not commit robbery, but gives his food to the hungry and provides clothing for the naked. He does not lend to them at interest or take profit from them. An evil man oppresses the poor and needy. He lends at interest and takes a profit. Ezekiel also says, on behalf of God, you take interest and make a profit from the poor. You extort unjust gain from your neighbors, and you have forgotten me, declares the sovereign Lord. That's the real heart of it, isn't it? When you're profiting from the poor, when you're seeing how much you can gain for your own advantage from them, you have forgotten God. In the book of Nehemiah, we read about Nehemiah, who was a governor, and he ruled under the supreme rule of the king of Persia, but Nehemiah was the governor of the area that the Jews were in Israel. And when he took over as governor, he heard about things that had been done by previous rulers. And the people came and they complained, especially the poor people. They said, we're mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, and our homes to get grain during the famine. So they're taking out loans against their own homes and their property just so they can get grain. We've had to borrow money to pay the king's tax. We have to subject our sons and daughters to slavery. They have to sell their kids to work for somebody else just to keep them alive. We're powerless because our fields and our vineyards belong to others. It's an unjust system, and the rulers have been profiting from it. Nehemiah says, when I heard their outcry on these charges, I was very angry. I accused the nobles and officials. I told them, you are exacting usury, high interest, from your own countrymen. We have bought back our Jewish brothers who were sold to the Gentiles, and now you're selling your brothers only for them to be sold back to us. So Nehemiah and some other good-hearted people of power and wealth had been buying people who were slaves and setting them free and paying the price to get them back from non-Jewish people. And now some of the Jewish leaders were selling them right back into slavery again and profiting from them, and Nehemiah was furious about that. He said, I and my brothers and my men are also lending the people money and grain, but let the exacting of usury stop. Stop charging them interest when you try to help them out. Give back to them immediately their fields, vineyards, olive groves, and houses, and also the usury you are charging them, the hundredth part of the money, grain, new wine and oil. Give them back that percentage you've been charging. God had originally instructed through Moses that every 7 years all debts were to be forgiven. And every 50 years, all land that was originally assigned to families was to go back to those families, no matter who had taken it over or bought it in the meantime. And this was a way of making sure that everybody had something and that disadvantages were not permanent. So God wants people to have another chance. He does not want unjust systems ripping off and exploiting the poor. And it's not just the system, it's also the way people interact at a personal level. The poor are shunned, even by their neighbors. But the rich have many friends. If you got money, people are going to be nice to you because they want a little of what you've got. And they know that you can give them a job, you can give them favors, but if you're poor, you can't. Wealth brings many friends, but a poor man's friend deserts him. A poor man is shunned by all his relatives. How much more do his friends avoid him? Though he pursues them with pleading, they're nowhere to be found. You don't like some poor guy to keep asking you to give you money or to get you some favor. And so you avoid poor people who ask for things. The poor are shunned. He who oppresses the poor to increase his wealth and he who gives gifts to the rich both come to poverty. So here Proverbs is saying, hey, if you're taking advantage of poor people and you're always kissing up to rich people, just realize that in the long run, God's going to balance things out. And when you do that kind of thing, you're going to come to poverty. Income from charging high interest rates will end up in the pocket of someone who is kind to the poor. If a king judges the poor with fairness, his throne will always be secure. And by contrast, a king who is unjust to the poor will often find his throne is pretty shaky, or people will overthrow him. The book of Proverbs says a lot of nice things about prosperity and about walking with the Lord and seeing financial blessing. But it's very important when we think about financial fitness to realize that money isn't everything. And part of financial fitness is understanding where poverty comes from, both in terms of personal behavior, but also in terms of public structures. And it's also important to realize that whatever Proverbs says about the benefit and the blessing of prosperity, it also says there are times when you're better off being poor, when poverty is better. Better a little with the fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. You're better off if you've got God and not too much money than if you've got money and no God and lots of turmoil. Better a little with righteousness, doing the right thing, than much gain with injustice. There are situations where doing the wrong thing and being unjust will make you money, but in that case, it's better just to not have much and to do the right thing. Better to be lowly in spirit and among the oppressed than to share plunder with the proud, with the people who are taking advantage of the poor. What a man desires is unfailing love. Better to be poor than a liar. Sometimes telling lies can make you money. A salesman who doesn't tell the truth might make some money off of it, but he'd be better off having less and being a truth teller. Better a poor man whose walk is blameless than a rich man whose ways are perverse. A rich man may be wise in his own eyes, but a poor man who has discernment sees through him. In a society, sometimes the TV camera admires the rich, and they follow the lifestyles of the rich and famous, and people think, oh, if only I can be like that. And the rich think, oh, man, I've got it made. I'm such a success. And if they're living a wicked life, if their money came to them by shady means, a poor man sees right through that. He says, I'd rather be poor than be like that. I'd rather have my character and less money than more money and no character. In thinking about rich and poor, Proverbs gives us this middle class prayer. Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Or I may become poor and steal and so dishonor the name of my God. Notice, in both cases, poverty or wealth, he's concerned that he not dishonor God. If I get too rich, I'll be tempted to become a fat cat and to think, I don't need God, I can take care of myself. On the other hand, if you become super poor and you need something to eat or you need to take care of your family, you get so desperate that you might steal, and then God will be dishonored. And so he says, Lord, just put me in the middle class. And that's a good prayer for most of us. There may be a few people who have the talent to make lots of money and who can use it wisely and who can maintain good relationships and can do well in their life, even being super rich, but most of us can't. And so we need to shoot for the middle. Many people might end this prayer by saying, give me neither poverty, amen. We don't want poverty, but go ahead with the riches. For most of us, though, riches would be dangerous as well. And so in this question of rich and poor, most of us should pray, Lord, put me in the middle somewhere so that I don't get desperate and dishonor you by stealing, and that I don't get proud and dishonor you by forsaking you. Again, back to our original question, what causes poverty? We've seen that sometimes personal faults do cause poverty. Poor people cause their own poverty by wickedness, foolishness, laziness, drunkenness, impulsiveness, wastefulness, carelessness. But social injustice also causes poverty. The rich people do make others poor by oppressing, exploiting, defrauding, discriminating, rigging the system. And we need to realize both of these dynamics can be at work. And I sometimes think that when it comes to churches, they should exchange preachers more often. Sometimes you'll have preachers in comfortable suburban churches where most people are quite wealthy, preaching that people need to be personally responsible and be wise and prudent and careful in the way they manage their money. And over in some poor quarter, you have a preacher saying, oh, we need to get rid of social injustice. The rich people have rigged the system. They're oppressing us. When in fact, many people sitting in their congregation have been lazy or drunkenness or brought it on themselves. And many of those people in the rich congregation may need that sermon on social injustice because they may be some of the people profiting from the way the system is rigged. So sometimes we're hearing what we want to hear. Poor people say, oh, I'm just poor because it's somebody else's fault. And rich people say, well, I'm rich because it's, and they're poor because it's their fault. So the poor blame their poverty on the rich people rigging it, and the rich people blame the poor for not doing what they should do, and the truth often is a little more complicated than that. Some people, in order to deal with their situation, need to take personal responsibility. It's not just the system. You've got to become moral, wise, hardworking, sober, steady, thrifty, careful. All the things we've been talking about when it comes to financial fitness. You've got to take responsibility for those things and not just blame the system all the time. But at the same time, we need to realize that sometimes the system is wrong. And the system has to be changed so that it limits the power of the powerful, or they'll just keep on gaining more power and more wealth. It's got to lift the lowly. It's got to honor equality. People have got to be fair. The government's got to be fair and compassionate and generous. And where these principles have been followed, at least to some degree, then you see societies prospering. In fact, throughout history and throughout the world, you see societies that have had the largest Christian influence are often those who are prospering the most. And a few reasons for that are found right here. Private property begins with the principles of the Ten Commandments. You shall not steal and you shall not covet. You can't take something because it belongs to somebody else. And don't envy what somebody else has. Don't covet that you could have it for yourself. Instead, work to earn something so that you don't have to take it from them. Private property. And when people work to have something for themselves rather than stealing it, and rather than constantly going around envying or blaming others, they manage to earn some things for themselves. Another aspect of Christianity is worthwhile work. Many civilizations have said that work is just something for slaves and for lowlifes, and the real fine people can live in leisure and think and debate and not actually do any work. But Christianity has always valued work and says, do everything as unto the Lord, work hard, and it also says the workman is worthy of his hire. And the Bible condemns people who don't pay the harvesters and the workers in the fields what they deserve to have coming to them. And so when a society values work by praising it as well as valuing it by paying for it, people do work. And where they work, they become productive and the society becomes more wealthy as a whole. Stewardship and calling. God calls us into different areas of life. It's not just my occupation, but it's God's calling, and I'm going to do it to honor Him. When people have that attitude towards work, they do a better job, and they become more productive, and in the end, they and their society become more wealthy. Personal responsibility. Not getting drunk all the time. Taking care of your family. Watching out for others. And the personal responsibility of owners and managers to provide good working conditions. These all help a society to flourish and to gain in prosperity. Strong families. I've mentioned already that broken families are one of the leading causes of poverty in wealthy societies. And a lot can be blamed on the society, but the fact is, if you don't stay married to people, if you're not faithful in your marriage, if you're not staying faithful sexually and you're having children by a lot of different fathers, and those fathers are fathering children by many different women, those children are put into poverty by the failure of the family mainly, not by the failure of the broader society. And on the other side, when families are strong, when a husband and wife are together, when they're looking out for their children and providing for each other, that family tends to prosper. In just societies where families are strong, they don't usually stay in poverty over the long haul. Another aspect of Christianity's contribution to prosperity is a positive outlook on things. If your business fails, you don't say, all is lost, woe is me, life is over. Or if you lose a job, you don't say, oh no, that's it, I can't possibly do anything else. Instead, you say, well, this is hard, it's really hard, but Lord, help me with that. And I know, Lord, because I belong to You, You have good things in store for me despite this painful setback. And so I'm going to try again. I'm going to go after another business, or I'm going to seek another job. And I'm not just going to sit around feeling sorry for myself and licking my wounds, because I believe that God has good plans for me. Moral capital is another aspect. In a society where markets are transparent, where contracts mean something, then business can be done. In a corrupt society where contracts are constantly broken, where there's no transparency in the markets and no regulation of how stocks are traded, then who wants to trade in those stocks when they don't know what they're getting? You need to have the moral capital of honesty and just dealings in order for a society to flourish. Now, no society is perfect, of course, but you need a certain level of moral capital for the economic capital to flourish. And you just need public justice. You need to have a system that gives the poor a fair chance in court, that makes sure the rich don't have too much money, that doesn't rig all the tax laws for those with the best tax lawyers, but that pursues public justice. And to the degree that various societies have made at least some progress in these areas, they tend to thrive, and these are in line with Christian principles. Now, having said all that, having talked about rich and poor and the fact that we have personal responsibility as well as public justice, where does that leave us as Christians in terms of our own financial fitness, our behavior before God in the manner we deal with finance and these issues of rich and poor? One thing it means is speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves and for the rights of all who are destitute. If you're in a situation where you have some influence and poor people don't and you can put in a good word for them, then do so. Rescue those being led away to death. Hold back those staggering towards slaughter. If you say, but we knew nothing about this, does not he who weighs the heart perceive it? One of the worst areas where people are being led away to death is in the millions and millions of unborn babies who've been aborted. They're the poorest of the poor. Their own parents won't look out for them. Nobody protects them. And we need to keep on speaking out on behalf of those who are being led away to death. In some societies, there are people whose working conditions are dreadfully unhealthy for them, or other situations of their poverty are causing death or disease or trouble. And we need to do what we can to speak up and to rescue to the degree that we have some influence. And we need to share. Back when God was speaking to the people of Israel and setting up a society for them, and we don't follow all of those rules that God gave to the nation of Israel anymore, but we can still learn from the basic principles, God said, there should be no poor among you, for the Lord your God will greatly bless you in the land He's giving you as a special possession. God was going to give them a good land. There would be wealth enough for everybody to do well, so there should be no poor among you. And then God says, just a few sentences later, there will always be some in the land who are poor. That's why I'm commanding you to share freely with the poor. So those two sentences, there should be no poor, there will always be poor, means that we need to be ready to share freely. Because some people, even if it's through fault of their own, they still may need a hand up. And certainly if it's through no fault of their own, they ought to get a hand up. But either way, there's going to be some people who are poor, and if you're not, and you're in a position to help, then do so. And Proverbs says, when you give, you gain. One man gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. A generous man will prosper. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. People curse the man who hoards grain, but blessing crowns him who is willing to sell. There it's talking about somebody who's got a lot of grain, and people are wanting grain to grind up for flour, but there's a famine, there's a shortage. And the guy with the grain says, hey, if I hold out another week or another month, the price is going to get even higher. And if I hold out longer, it's going to get even higher. People are going to be desperate. And then I'll sell it to for gobs and gobs and gobs of money. And the Lord says, people curse somebody who does that, but blessing crowns the one who's willing to sell it to them when they need it. So it's saying overall, you might think that keeping stuff for yourself is the way to prosper. It's not. When you bless others, you get blessed. When you refresh them, you get refreshed. And that's an important principle always to keep in mind when you're thinking about financial fitness. Are you gaining through giving? Are you blessing others and being blessed in return? Generosity pays, stinginess costs. A generous man will himself be blessed, for he shares his food with the poor. A stingy man is eager to get rich and is unaware that poverty awaits him. He who despises his neighbor sins, but blessed is he who is kind to the needy. Are you getting the point yet? Proverbs is full of statements like this, and so is the rest of the Bible. He who gives to the poor will lack nothing. But he who closes his eyes to them receives many curses. Our Lord Jesus Christ himself told a story which could be a sermon based on this statement. He who closes his eyes to them receives many curses. Jesus told of a rich man who lived in great luxury, and of a poor man named Lazarus who lived out in the street nearby. No home, nothing decent to wear. Wounds on his body and sores, and nobody would take care of him, and certainly not that rich man. And dogs came and licked his sores. And then they both died. And the rich man was buried at a fancy funeral with high honors, and Lazarus's body was dumped somewhere. But Lazarus found himself in the home of the blessed, and the rich man found himself in hell, begging for just a drop of water, wishing he had done differently, wanting somebody to warn his brothers and being told, hey, even if somebody rose from the dead, they won't listen if they won't listen to what they already have in the law of Moses and the prophets. Well, we've seen what Moses and the prophets and the Proverbs have to say. It says, he who closes his eyes to the poor receives many curses. And we saw, too, that a person who lives that way is doing so because he's out of touch with God. He's forsaken God. It's not that you're saved by being nice to the poor, but if you are saved, you're going to have a heart for the poor because God has a heart for the poor. And if you're saved, you've got the Spirit of God in your heart. If you don't have God's heart, you don't have God. And so, being kind to the needy is God's great call for us. Rich and poor, there's a lot they don't have in common, but they have this in common. The Lord is the maker of them all. The poor man and the oppressor have this in common. The Lord gives sight to the eyes of both. Don't forget who our maker is, and we're all going to be answering to Him. He who oppresses the poor shows contempt for their maker, but whoever is kind to the needy honors God. You're not just being nice to a needy person. You're honoring God. God takes it personally. He who mocks the poor shows contempt for their maker. He who is kind to the poor lends to who? To the Lord. And He will reward him. So, you're not just doing something to another person. You're doing it to God Himself. And again, our Lord Jesus Christ speaks with the greatest power and authority on this. He takes the message of these Proverbs and tells what will happen at the end of the age when He sits on the judgment throne and all people are gathered before Him. And He says that they're going to be separated like sheep and goats on His right and on His left. And He'll say to those on His right, "Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me to drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was a prisoner, and you visited me. I was naked, and you clothed me." And they'll say, "Oh, Lord, when did that ever happen? When did we see you hungry or thirsty or sick or naked or in prison?" And Jesus will say, "Whatever you did to one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did to me. He who is kind to the poor lends to the Lord, and He will reward him. But to those, the goats on His left, He will say, 'Depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you did not feed me. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you didn't take me in. I was naked, and you didn't clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you didn't visit me.'" And they'll say, "Well, Lord, when did that ever happen?" And He'll say, "Whenever you didn't do it for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you didn't do it for me." God takes it personally. And so, let us love our neighbor as ourselves, but also let us love our neighbor as we love our God.